The House Veterans Affairs Division will come to order. And Representative Rosenthal, would you please lead us in the flag? Pledge allegiance to America.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And the committee roll has been taken. A quorum is present. Representative Lesh, would you approve the minutes from February 26th?
I give it my approval, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh approves the minutes from February 26th, moves those minutes. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Just a reminder, next Monday we're going to have Vets on the Hill. And in your packet, members, you have regional rooms that are going to be set up by the DAV where you can go to these rooms based on your districts and have face-to-face talks with the veterans from your district. There's 5 different rooms that are set up. And also there's a map there showing the different districts, different regions. And this will be a good way for the members of this committee or any members in the House of Representatives to get out and meet those people that are coming in here. And they're coming from all over the state and by bus to get out and meet with our veteran community and face-to-face and also discuss, you know, your support for our veterans legislation. And just if you need any information from the committee here, members, just remember the legislation that was passed in 2016, 2017, 18 bills, pieces of legislation in 2016, and then 29 pieces of legislation in 2017. And then you should have a pretty good handle on the legislation that we're going forward with this session. And with that, because we ran out of time last Monday, we're going to bring in the Minister of Department of Veterans Affairs, and with Mr. Ben Johnson was not able to provide the information last week, so we're asking for Mr. Johnson to come forward. You've been before this committee before many times, and I know you've been in my office many times talking about MDVA in representing our commissioner, Larry Shelato, and please introduce yourself to the committee and who you represent for the record.
Chair Detmer, members of the committee, my name is Benjamin Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm going to try and bring up this presentation, give you a brief overview of what MDVA is seeking this year in terms of capital investment.
And members, there's a copy of the presentation in your packet, and it also looks like it also will be up in the screens.
Apologies, sir.
No, that's fine. I was just mentioning in Ways and Means today that it would be nice if every hearing room had a system where somebody who had a presentation could just come in, sit down, and plug in to our equipment. And I guess we haven't gotten to that point yet here in the House, but it would be nice to be able to have that. So.
Well, sir, I had it up before we sat down, but as soon as you closed the laptop, it happened. Yeah.
You're asking for a new state office building, Mr. Chair?
No. Maybe each room would have a laptop or something where somebody could come in and just plug in their presentation and go for it.
I'm ready. I apologize. I understand we've got a limited amount of time here today. Again, Ben Johnson, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is a quick overview of our agency and our request for your support for this coming session, capital investment bill. We are dedicated to serving Minnesota's veterans and their families. We do that both in long-term programming for them during their careers, whether that be active duty, supporting their families in our partnership with the Yellow Ribbon Program, or at our skilled nursing facilities located throughout the state of Minnesota. Context for today is the veterans' homes. We run five veterans' homes and two cemeteries. That is our infrastructure. Buildings at Minneapolis date back to the mid to late 1800s, post-Civil War, when the veterans' homes got their start. We maintain 68 buildings statewide, over a million square feet, and $310.7 million worth of replacement value. The key here is that nine of these buildings have 24/7 occupancy. So whereas most state assets are not utilized round the clock other than our friends over in corrections, at the Minneapolis and Hastings and Fergus Falls, Silver Bay, and Laverne homes, we are 24/7 caretakers of some of our most vulnerable veterans in the state, or aging veterans, and their spouses who are residents. We complete facility condition assessments basically every other year in anticipation of understanding what the needs are for our homes. And what we've provided this overview is a 108 asset preservation projects with poor or unacceptable ratings. Again, we're not looking to do new construction. We're not looking to build anything fancy. What we're looking to do is take care of those issues that we've identified as the most serious. And the process by which we assess our facilities is a facility condition assessment. Data provided by the SCA gives us a clear understanding of the overall picture of our facilities, and what it does is assess building systems. Now, this is a statewide program that was rolled out about 7 years ago so that all facilities throughout the state of Minnesota, all of the assets that the state owns, can be assessed on in a real-time basis and in an apples-to-apples sort of comparison so that building systems are then assessed in the same way through the Department of Natural Resources, Minnesota Department of Corrections, DOT, and as well as us. You'll see at the bottom of slide five the conditions ratings. And now a five is something that only needs normal preventative maintenance, and that is something that we utilize our operational budget for, going on down through good, fair, poor, and critical. This year we focused our asks on those at the bottom. Those are the things that are either failing or are functional but don't meet current quota requirements. These are things that we have identified as being the most significant. And so, again, the total for those kinds of projects is $13.124 million. This is asset preservation. This is not new construction. This is not intended to go beyond identifying and taking care of those most critical needs. This data was initially compiled in 2013 and has been updated. I spent a good portion of last summer traveling around, meeting with our facilities managers, traveling with my building supervisor, and going through line by line the facility assessment and understanding everything from roofing and shingles to siding to electrical to heating and cooling distribution. Give you a sense on slide eight of where we're located and what the total ask is for each of these locations. I think it stands to reason that Minneapolis, as our largest facility with the most veterans and the most buildings, is the largest total request. That also reflects the age of the facility at Minneapolis, again, going back to post-Civil War when the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs first got its start. Silver Bay, there's a big ask. The interesting part about Silver Bay, and we'll get to it shortly, is that as a standalone facility, it started its life as an elementary school built in 1953. Became part of the MDVA family of homes, but the boiler, I think, has only been upgraded once since initial construction. So this 3.4 at Silver Bay is for heating and cooling system upgrade and associated distribution. To give you a sense of where we are, it's all over the state, from the metro area to the northeast, southwest, west, and Hastings, which is, I guess, considered metro. But if you've been to the Hastings campus, it doesn't feel like a metro area. It feels like a nice small-town community. So, again, this is not an exhaustive list of projects. What I'm trying to do is represent some of the items that we're looking at. So we'll start with Minneapolis. And the kinds of repairs we're looking at are the concrete basement walls, communications, exterior windows, the ever-present brick veneer and tuck pointing. I'm sure you've heard ad nauseum. And then cooling and generating systems. An example to sort of zero in is Building 10, which is our main campus where our deputy commissioner works out of. The HVAC system needs to be replaced. The pneumatic controls are obsolete. There's some images there. Some of the issues, there's not sufficient ventilation, and we need to upgrade because the chiller is using a refrigerant that will be phased out by 2020. This is a refrigerant that has harmful environmental effects and is something that we'd like to address. Another sample is the central plant tunnels. Minneapolis is built on a limestone bluff looking over the Mississippi River. But as a result of that, there's not a lot of places for water to go. And so all of our supply tunnels for steam and water, electrical and whatnot, running throughout the campus have significant – there are challenges associated with that. So you can see an example of wet floors. The walls themselves are not in bad spot. Bad condition, but if you can see the utilities are bracketed there with metal plates fastened to the floor, and those in standing water and steel have been deteriorating. Building 13 is a historic structure. That is a picture of the second floor. You can see where water has infiltrated and ruined the ceiling. That goes through into the first floor, and at this point, it's unsafe. The challenge we have is that it is a historic structure, so all we can use it for at this point is storage. We received some funding last year through the bonding bill. We were able to address, actually, I learned later that the wood columns have been added, and that was part of the bonding that we were supplied last year. So we appreciate that. The building is in a little better shape now for long-term repairs. But it is a historic structure, so the challenges there are what to do with it. You can't tear it down without a significant process, so our request is to bring it up to par so we can utilize it for more than just storage. Again, I mentioned Silver Bay. This is a replacement of the boiler as well as the distribution system. It's a fairly expensive project, but well worth it. The current system is very inefficient. The other challenge is because of the location of Silver Bay, any failures or issues with the current system could result in a pretty uncomfortable and unsafe environment for the veterans living there. There is no backup boiler system. There is no backup heat. So this one we've been able to maintain, but they're both the system and the distribution system are nearing the end of their useful life, and so we're looking for your support to replace that system. Fergus Falls is west central Minnesota. The challenge here with this facility has to do with water infiltration and damage to the foundation. So this building I believe this is a 1998 construction. I think it's our most, it's either 94 or 98. But it's one of our most recent construction projects in the state was to build this, and then there was an upgrade in 2007. But the building is settled, and the foundation is not in great shape, and so this is a significant project to excavate and repair the foundation, make it waterproof, and try and avoid the water intrusion and the moisture. As you can well imagine, moisture in the basement of a building housing aging veterans and their spouses, not a recipe for success. I mentioned Hastings. Hastings is another one of our facilities that started life as something else. It was a Minnesota State Hospital, and then in 1978 became a veterans home. We use it as our primary domiciliary, which is essentially transitional housing, not rising to the level of skilled nursing. That is an image of a roof that doesn't drain properly, so we've got a green roof. Unintentionally, we've got some water lines. Now, one of the challenges with Hastings is that our main power plant is downhill from the main residential facility, so all of the heat and steam, all the electrical and utilities are run through tunnels that run uphill into the existing building, which, again, is has been with us since 78, but was initially constructed in phases over the previous four or five decades. So some issues there. Again, more challenges with the tunnel. And that is a request to bring all of our ones and twos up to par at Hastings. Finally, you may be aware of our newest cemetery in Preston, which is at this point still all fives. You might not be aware that we've been at Little Falls for, I believe it's now three decades. And so as a result, we've been able to maintain Little Falls in very good stead, but there are a couple of items. The roofing, just basic shingle system, needs to be replaced, and domestic water heaters. So not a major system, but important nonetheless. Both of those are at the end of their useful life. And finally, Laverne, I mentioned, is southwestern Minnesota. And again, we're looking for a water heater replacement. And this is a split system. We're trying to update it to make sure that it is good to go for another 25 years. I'll close with this. Again, this is not new construction. This is not some of the things that a lot of people like to crow about. These are essential repairs to existing systems. And the total ask here, 13.124, represents only about 35% of the total value of our deferred maintenance. So deferred maintenance, the full total would be $38 million, which means that everything from one all the way to five that could be addressed would be. Our goal is not to address every single item. It has been prioritized and categorized as those most important. The governor recommended our full ask, so we made this presentation to him and MMB in his office last fall, and said that seems like a reasonable request, and I would encourage you to talk to your caucuses, talk to the rest of your folks, those in the Capital Investment Committee, let them know that we're not looking for bells and whistles, we're looking for basic maintenance, things that have been deferred far too long. I've taken enough of your time. I'm happy to answer questions, but I'm looking forward to seeing you or answering any that I might.
Any questions for Mr. Johnson? Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, could you just give us a brief overview of what your position is on our need for extra facilities? I know there are also several proposals floating around for needed veterans' homes. So bed capacity versus need, just to kind of give us a general overview of where we may be at with those situations. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Detmer, Representative Frankie. So I'm actually, we're getting a snowstorm. I was ready to be presenting an overview of the new homes situation in the state of Minnesota. But to your question, Minnesota has the ability to meet the federal capacity. There is a waiting list, I think it's about 1,000 throughout the state of Minnesota for homes that exist. We don't have a significant waiting list at the domiciliary that's in your neck of the woods, but we do have some opportunities to build. If the legislature and the governor are interested, there certainly is the opportunity to build up to the federal limit. 1,058 beds is allocated to the state, and I think we're at 824 currently constructed. So there are proposals on the docket this year that have been introduced, and MDVA is excited at the opportunity to provide information about what that process looks like and help make decisions going forward. Housing for veterans is something we're passionate about, so if the legislature and the governor are interested in funding that, we're on board.
Chair Davids.
Thank you very much. Could you give me those to the witness? Could you please give me those numbers again? We're approved for 11 what?
Chair Detmer, Chair Dave, the federal VA has allocated 1,058 total beds for the state.
And how many do we have?
I believe we are at 824. So we are opening Building 22. It's a reconstruction of a building that did not meet our needs at Minneapolis. So Building 22 will be opening March 22nd. And that is a 100-bed facility. That's the last of our major construction at this point. But it allows for, I think the balance is 234 beds available before we hit the federal cap.
Okay,
Chair Davids.
Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, that 234 does not include the one that's going to be at Minneapolis.
Mr. Johnson.
That's what's left.
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Davis, that's correct. That is that once this is complete, we open on the grand opening the 22nd, and the balance after that is 234.
Okay. Chair Davis. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Mr. Johnson, I guess, you know, I heard you talk about Southwest, Laverne. I heard you talk about Northwest. I heard you talk about Northeast. I heard you talk about the metro area. I didn't hear anything about Southeast. Could you explain why that is?
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Demmer, Chair Davis, we don't have a home in southeastern Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any other questions?
I rest my case.
Could you just give us a little briefing on, you mentioned briefly about the grand opening on Building 22, and it's going to take place in Building 19. Could you just give us a little briefing, and maybe we can get some of the members from our committee to attend that?
Absolutely, Chair. So Building 22 is the last of our three-phase construction project at Minneapolis. We finished major construction the end of December, and we are holding our grand opening celebration ribbon-cutting ceremony on March 22nd. 10 o'clock in the morning is when it kicks off. There will be tours available. We've been really excited about putting this together to invite the community in to see that. This is a partnership. This is construction funds that were supported by the state of Minnesota and then parlayed into federal funding as well. So some matching grants available. We're excited about it. It's a state-of-the-art facility, 100 beds, five stories, and is slotted into a spot that used to be Building 17, which was a 1970s-era construction, which really just didn't have good sight lines, didn't have sight lines I'm talking about the corridors and hallways for seeing resident rooms and being able to provide the highest quality of care. So poor sight lines, poor layout and infrastructure, there were some significant challenges. Back to the original discussion about infrastructure, the building, we weren't able to update the facilities in a timely manner and ended up being a very significant fix or replace and opted to replace it. So March 22nd, you're all welcome to attend. I understand the 22nd is a significant day for the Minnesota legislature this year. It's also the first deadline. If you'd be interested in coming out for cake and a tour, we would love to have you.
And this project was how many years in the making?
Well, from original funding, I don't know when the initial funding started, but there were allocations for pre-design and design and demolishing the existing facilities. This project, particular from beginning to end, the construction timeline was about 18 months. But this is the third of our newest buildings to be constructed, basically demolished the substandard buildings or that didn't meet the needs. Interestingly, in this case, Building 6 is not going to be demolished. It's another historic structure at the Minneapolis home. But it simply wasn't up to our modern standards of care. So the residents from Building 6 will be transitioning to Building 22. And 6, we'll have some opportunities to offer some other kinds of care at the historic Building 6.
Well, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you so much for coming in. Thank you. The first of our four bills on the agenda for the are the Department of Military Affairs Agency bills. And Mr. Kerr and also Captain Baker, please come to the testifying table. And we'll begin with House File 3199, Representative Poston, please come to the testifier table. And Representative Poston, would you like to move your bill before the committee, and it is going to be re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move my bill.
Go ahead.
House File 3199 is a bill that clarifies that the military code needs to procedurally and substantively conform to related federal government laws and rules and orders. And having said that, I'd like to pass this over to the testifier. One of the testifiers, Mr. Kerr, who is the executive director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs.
Okay. Mr. Kerr, could you please introduce yourself for the record and who you represent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the executive director of the Department of Military Affairs. And I wanted to give a little bit of oversight. This seems like a pretty simple thing, and we think it is. It's adding three words to existing statute. As part of what we do in military training, our legal section does rehearsals and tabletop exercises and mock courts martial to make sure that they are capable and competent of doing their job. And as part of that training process, we identified a potential deficiency that in the way that we use evidence in a court martial. There was some question about whether the way that we would theoretically go about conducting a court martial using the manual for courts martial that the federal government uses, if that would stand under Minnesota law. And our team, after much wailing and gnashing of teeth, as lawyers are wont to do, came up with this proposed recommendation to make our situation more defensible in the event of an appeal should we ever have to conduct a court martial in Minnesota. That's the basis for the request, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Kerr? And Mr. Baker, or Captain Baker, I'm sorry, would you like to address the committee? Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Captain Justin Baker. I work as the attorney advisor at the state's judge advocate's office.
Okay. Any questions for Captain Baker? Okay. Yes, Representative Lesh.
Thank you. So I'm just looking at these three words. So, oh, yeah.
So just so I'm clear, our procedures under this state statutory change are only valid insofar as they conform procedurally and substantively under this bill. Is that correct, Captain?
Captain Baker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, as the language is going forward right now, or what it was before the language, what the statute of the language?
Representative Lesh?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain, I don't know what you just said. Can you say that again?
Well,
Captain Baker?
Mr. Chair, what I was just meaning to clarify, Representative Lesh, did you mean what the law meant before the change or what it means now with the change?
Well, as I understand, thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand, Captain Baker, the intent of the bill is to make our acts, whether it's UCMJ or not, only valid for the purposes of consideration under UCMJ if they conform procedurally and substantively to the federal code. Is that correct?
Captain Baker?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lesh, as it's written now, really what it does is add the idea of a procedural and substantive part to what we already believed was already that the law was intended to do, which was essentially to allow us to incorporate federal military rules and regulations where the state law is essentially silent.
Okay.
And so this is just a way for us to add the procedural and substantive pieces to it as well, which would apply to things like rules of evidence, any procedural rules of courts martial that aren't addressed in the state statutes.
Representative Lesh.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think I understand, but let me ask you this. In the midst of all the wailing and gnashing of teeth that Mr. Kerr referenced, was there any discussion about omissions under Minnesota law or instances that would be vulnerable to appeal because of nonconformity, specific areas, specific cases that were problematic that caused the that helped lead to this proposal of this procedurally and substantive language?
Is that for Captain?
Yeah, it's for Captain, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Captain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh. So, as I sort of stated before, we believe that there really wasn't an issue as it was written prior as far as what we're able to do where we don't have guidance from Minnesota law. For example, Minnesota law allows us to conduct a court martial. We have a Minnesota Court of Military Justice that also borrows and also incorporates the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The concern that we had was going forward. It doesn't specifically talk about substantively and procedurally. And procedure was an issue that we thought would going forward because we don't have for example, a Minnesota manual of courts martial. And so this would allow us to incorporate the federal manual of courts martial as far as procedures goes, rules of evidence, and so that essentially we wouldn't have to recreate the wheel.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good. Thank you. Any other questions for our testifiers? Representative Polston, would you any closing remarks?
No closing remarks. I just appreciate your support.
Okay. Representative Polston renews his motion. The House File 3199 be re-referred to General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The House File 3199 is referred to the General Register. The next bill on the agenda is House File 3212. I represent New. Welcome to the committee. Representative New. And Representative New, I will move House File 3212 before the committee and that it will be re-referred to the General Register. Representative New, please present your bill to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is the first time I've presented a bill before the committee, and I do have treats.
Goody, goody, goody.
You know, if that helps. So this is also a change requested by the Department of Military Affairs, and it's just regarding setting the pay rate for National Guard personnel who staff armory rentals. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to the testifiers.
Please introduce yourself again, Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And there are two bills that you're going to hear today. This is the first of them that have to do with something we've been struggling with for the last year with regard to the rental of armories to the public. And we became aware about 18 months ago, our auditor, being a CPA, receives frequent communication from the IRS about practices and procedures, and he identified a potential weakness that we had. Since about 1930, we've been renting our armories to the public, but we've insisted when we rented an armory to the public that one of our members secure our interests in the facility as a custodian. The employer-employee relationship, we treated that individual as a contractor to the lessee. It was made brought to our attention by the auditor that because of the level of control that we have over the individual, that the IRS would probably find that that's not an appropriate relationship under under FSLA, and that we really needed to look at how we were doing that to make sure that we had an employer-to-employee relationship with the custodian of the facility. So we spent a lot of staff time trying to figure out how to get that done and decided that the best possible way to do that would be to call to state active duty individuals of the Guard or retirees of the Guard, both of which are authorized. The governor has the authority to do that, and make them employees of us and then pass the bills back to the lessees. So it's a little bit of a complicated procedure, but what it does for us is it guarantees that the proper employer taxes are being paid by us, not by the lessees, and ensures that our interests are still protected. In doing that, we also identified that, okay, great, so the available people to do this are members of the National Guard or retirees. And we saw a potential problem in that. So I am a retired member of the National Guard. I'm a retired colonel. By law, if I'm called to state active duty, I have to be paid as a colonel. For me to be called to state active duty to perform as a custodian at the Cottage Grove Armory is probably not a fiscally responsible pass-through to the lessee. Instead, we tried to identify, can the Adjutant General determine what pay rate custodians should receive and apply that? So this bill would do two things. Number one, delegates the level of authority from the governor. We're currently working under a written order from the governor giving us the authority to do this, but we've had to continue that several times, and we would prefer the law to show that authority in the hands of the Adjutant General so that we don't have to continuously go back to the governor's office and gain that approval. And it also allows the Adjutant General clearly in statute to fix the rate of pay for folks performing those custodial duties. The way we do that procedurally, by the way, is to pass that cost back to the lessee. So this will also simplify that process because we'll be able to get a hard number based on what it's going to cost without knowing who's going to perform the duties during the negotiation process for the armory rental. That was probably more complicated than it needed to be.
Any other questions from committee? Representative O'Driscoll, after you eat your cookie.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I was kind of hoping I get a second there to be able to finish that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, this bill in no way prescribes in law what facilities are or are not eligible for lease or rental in the National Guard Armory buildings. Is that correct,
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, that is correct.
And Mr. Kerr, Mr. Kerr, the reason I raise that question is there may be some areas that are on that facility that the general public's eyes should not be seeing, or the areas that are secured and the like. And so I just want to make sure that we are not doing anything that requires you to open up spaces that otherwise would not have been opened in this bill to the general public.
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, the Adjutant General still has the authority to determine off-limits areas, and we don't rent facilities that we feel shouldn't be rented to the general public. At the same time, we feel it is our public responsibility, since the buildings are paid for by the public, to make them available to the greatest extent that we can to the public for their use as resources in our communities.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kerr, I fully endorse the statements that you just shared with the committee today. Thank you.
And any other questions? Yes. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Mr. Kerr, the question is for, do we know, I mean, I know in the armories that I've been a part of, there was all kinds of stuff at various times, you know, bar mitzvahs, I mean, Cinco de Mayo. Not Cinco de Mayo, the 15-year-old. Cinco de Mayo, thank you. That, you know, at armories they'd have those, I mean, those were huge celebrations. But do we have an assessment of how, what percentage of times those armories are used when they're available? I mean, how utilized are they?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, an excellent question. It varies very much by the geography. Where you are in the state determines how often your armory is used, and there is a personality component to this as well, in that the local readiness NCOs and their relationships with the communities, the more outgoing that relationship is, the more the facility tends to be used. But we do track that data, and I'd be happy to provide a report back to the committee. We already owe you an answer from the last time I was here. We're working on that data. Absolutely. Well, you should be. It's all good.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Kerr. It's not that important. I was just curious if you knew it off the top of your head, and you don't have to get back to me on that. But if you think of it later on, it'd be nice to know.
And Mr. Kerr, I do have a question. I know the language doesn't say what the pay grade is for the custodial. Is that going to just be determined by the tag, or how's that?
Our intention was to have it determined by the tag, and we were kind of zeroing in on a pay grade of Staff Sergeant.
Okay.
Staff Sergeant 10, I think, is what we would have been talking about.
Okay. And that would be an E6, correct?
Correct. That's okay. Correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. With that, the chair renews the motion. The House file 3-2. Oh, excuse me. Representative New, do you have some closing remarks?
No, I just appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you for the cookies. And
you're very welcome.
And so the chair renews the motion. File 3212 be referred to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion fails. House file 3212 will be referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative New. The next bill on the agenda, and I see Mr. Kerr and Mr. Baker stays in the hot seats there. House file 3213, Representative Munson, welcome to the committee. Please join Mr. Kerr and Captain Baker at the table.
Thank you.
And with that, I will move House file 3213 before the committee, and that it will be referred to the General Register. Representative Munson, your bill is before us. Please present your bill to the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the and members.
Wait a minute. This is your first bill before this committee, right?
That is correct.
These cookies are really good.
I did bring treats, but I dropped them off in a veteran's home on the way here.
Oh, okay.
Good. I'm not under oath at any.
Good answer. Huh? Good answer.
Chair.
Yes.
I'll lay the bill over until he goes to sit on the That is within our purview.
Well, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Present your bill.
This bill is to clarify the authority of the TAG to rent the buildings. I think it has some overlap with the previous bill. Bill had previously had to do with the rate that's paid. This actually just clarifies the authority of the TAG to rent the facilities in more than just the facilities at Camp Ripley. But I'll turn it over to Mr. Kerr to clarify.
Okay, Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. So as part of that same staffing process, we went through and identified that there was a little bit of a struggle with finding a direct line to the Adjutant General's authority to rent armories. There is clear authority for him to rent facilities at Camp Ripley, and there is actually in statute the authority for him to delegate the rental authority to armory boards, but the authority was not clear. Again, it's not something we felt a great problem with because we have been renting the facilities and expect to continue to do so, but we felt it would be an appropriate thing to come back in and make this adjustment to fix the statute and clean that up. And we did also, I believe, in this bill make reference to the policies and how we do that cost sharing for that custodial support in relationship to renting the armories. And that's basically what it does, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, this question might sound real familiar. This bill does nothing to prescribe in law certain facilities, rooms, others that must be made available to the public. My assumption is it's still at the discretion of the TAG, and this is very similar in nature to what we did with the Guard armories that we're doing with those joint-owned assets with Military Affairs.
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll, yes, sir, that's exactly correct. The Adjutant General still retain the right to make those decisions and to maintain oversight over the entire process.
Mr. Chair, no further questions.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Munson, any closing remarks?
Nope. Just look forward to favorable action by the committee. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the chair renews the motion that House File 3213 be referred to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the House File 3213 will be referred to the General Register. And the next bill on the agenda is House File 3278. That's my bill, and I will turn over the gavel to Vice Chair Bliss.
Chair Detmer, would you like to move your bill before the committee and that it be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee?
I would like to move my bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Detmer, your bill is before us. Please tell us about your bill.
Well, the bill just basically clarifies some language that the Adjutant General is responsible for operating the department and the military reservations at the state level, and as opposed to simply protecting them. And I think we just need some clarification language here. And the bill also exempts the department from regulation from the local and county units of government. So with that, I would like to have Mr. Kerr just kind of briefly go over what this bill does. And basically what it does is just clarifies language.
Mr. Kerr, could you please state your name and who you're with for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. This requirement actually came from a different staffing process, in that we had the opportunity to identify we had some challenges with the facility at Camp Ripley and some jurisdictional problems with Morrison County, and we felt it was important that we identify that though we believe that the agency is subject to state law, we do not feel that the agency should be subjected to local ordinance, and this just clarifies that not only for Camp Ripley, but also for the facilities that we operate in the communities around Minnesota.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifiers? Would anyone else like to testify? Is there any discussion? Hearing none. Chair Detmer, would you your final statement?
I'd like to renew my motion and go ahead, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Thank you for your support.
Chair Detmer renews the motion that House File 3278 be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 3278 is re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. The final bill of today is HF 1123. Representative Dabney, please come to the testifiers table with your witnesses, please. I will move that HF 1123 before the committee and that it be re-referred to the Taxes Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, is there an amendment in the committee's possession?
I understand you have an author's amendment, the DE1 amendment. Does everyone have a copy of this amendment? I will move that Representative Dabney's author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author wants. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, just to reassure committee members, it's technical and conforming in nature that this was caught by staff. You all changed some of the property tax statute in the 2017 tax bill, and this bill, as originally drafted, preceded that. It needed to catch up with new language.
Okay, all in favor of the author's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 1123 is amended with the D1 amendment. Representative, please tell us about your bill and introduce your witness, too.
I will do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the 10th anniversary of the state recognizing the service of disabled veterans by providing them a homestead value exclusion. That was passed in 2008. And we decided as a state to exclude the first $300,000 in value of a homesteaded property for disabled veterans, for those fully and permanently disabled. For veterans who are partially disabled at 70% or above, it's a $150,000 exclusion for the first part of their real estate valuation. We've done a number of things as a legislature over the years. We've expanded to caregivers. We've provided the same benefit for surviving spouses. We've expanded it to the surviving spouses of people, service members killed in action. We've done a number of things. What we haven't done is touched the exclusion amount. So House File 1123 simply works to increase the exclusion amount as a way to start a discussion. With me today is Mr. Tannenbaum, Korean War veteran who would like to weigh in. He was the one who brought this bill proposal to me.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I want to start by thanking you for allowing me to be here today to talk to you.
Excuse me, could you just bring the microphone over a little bit? There you go. Thank you.
My name is Bill Tannenbaum. I'm an Army veteran. I served during the Korean War. I'll tell you, among some other injuries I had, I lost a great deal of my hearing, and over the years it has kind of gotten worse. So if you ask me something and I don't hear, please bear with me. You know, on behalf of the Legion and the VFW, the AM vets, and all other veterans, I would like to thank you all for the service that you have given to the residents of the state of Minnesota. It is really appreciated. There's a great deal of interest and support among the above organizations and the individuals in these organizations to increase the deductible amount for homesteads in Minnesota when owned and occupied by veterans with military service-connected disabilities in calculating real estate taxes. Home values have increased, but the deductible amount has not changed in many years. We are asking you that you support to increase the deductible amount. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions to testify? And there's anybody in the audience who would like to comment about this piece of legislation? And Representative Lesh, I know you have a question.
Well, go with
your question first.
I just answered my own question. I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
A lawyer answered his own question.
That's my favorite way to answer it, actually.
Mr. Chair, are we televised today by any chance?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Are we? Oh, we are televised.
Oh.
Okay. Mr. Diamond.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Tom Diamond, DFL Veterans Caucus. Had the pleasure to be at the various committee meetings last year where we talked about this issue and how to improve it, expand it to additional spouses, improve the benefits. I would just like to speak very strongly in support of this bill. This is a very important bill for disabled veterans to keep them and their spouses and families in their homes. And so anything that the committee can do to advance that cause is greatly appreciated.
Okay, just a reminder, everybody, this was the first time that somebody used a party identification. I remember we come in here and it's a nonpartisan. So, but just a point of fact for everybody, we try to keep everything nonpartisan in here. So, but thank you, Mr. Nine.
Yeah. Chair, if I can just explain, I agree wholeheartedly with the chair. This is not a partisan issue. But as I do represent an organization, I think it's important that I be clear when
okay.
I speak.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers? And Representative Dabney, any closing remarks?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. Thank you for the hearing, members. Thank you for your time and patience, and I ask for your support to move this proposal along to the Almighty Tax Committee, I believe it's referred to.
Okay, with that, the chair renews the motion, House File 1123, as amended, be brief referred to the Tax Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 1123, as amended, is referred to taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Yeah, thank you. And just a reminder before we adjourn here. Tonight's joint hearing is canceled because of the weather. We were going to have a joint hearing with the Senate regarding the request for the veterans' homes. And also a reminder that on Monday, May 12th, is the Veterans Day on the Hill. That next Monday, the rally in the Capitol Rotunda at 10 a.m. And this place is going to be hopping with our men and women who are currently serving and have served. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.